anything. This is where having a solid spine is invaluable. Having a spine lets me know where I am starting from and where I want to go. It's easy to forget this when you're enjoying yourself so much in the middle. In this sense, I think of spine as an efficiency expert holding a stopwatch as I work. It lets me know when I am dawdling or digressing or wasting time. It reminds me that everything I add is either on message or off. Most of all, it lets me know when I am done. I take my cues in this regard from Buster Keaton. What I like about Keaton is how simply he got to where he wanted to go. His productivity was extraordinary, in large part because he always had a clear idea of where to start and where to finish. He had an economy of purpose and execution, which I attribute to having a strong spine in his work. You could argue that all of his comic set pieces had the same spine. Get the last laugh. He knew that the payoff, the one big laugh, always came at the end when he fell down a hole or slipped on a banana peel or watched everything come crashing down around him. Keaton knew that you don't get the laugh when you set the scene up. You don't get the laugh while you're developing it during the middle section. You get the laugh at the end, when you actually hit the deck. It wasn't that Keaton rushed a scene, but he was very economical about the middle. Some scenes took their time. In the leisurely opening of the 1921 short film The Goat, a starving Keaton is sent to the back of a bread line. He doesn't realize he's standing behind two mannequins. So, for perhaps the first time in film history, we watch a character wait. In another short, I think of Keaton standing on the street. On the balcony above is a girl he longs for. He scribbles a love note to her, folds it into an airplane, and sends it up to her. The camera stays on Keaton for a few moments, and then the paper comes floating back to him torn into little snowflakes. He turns up his collar to protect himself from the cold. That's pure Keaton. He gets from the premise of the scene, would-be lover is rebuffed, to the punchline, the chill from paper snowflakes, with extraordinary economy of mood and action. That technique was his spine. Years ago, I spent a lot of time studying Keaton's films, trying to understand how he achieved his effects, and hoping to do the same in my work. Patterns emerged. There was always a disaster in Keaton's films, and he always survived. And there was always a moment in which he endured and suffered and waited for disaster to strike. I saw method in his mayhem. The storyline may change from film to film, but Keaton had a theme. Disaster strikes. And he had a spine. Survive. To get the last laugh. He didn't waste much time in the middle. He went from cause to effect as quickly as possible. The directness of his method can be summed up in his most famous stunt, the falling wall sequence from Steamboat Bill Jr. He's standing in front of a wall that's about to come crashing down. He doesn't know it, but we do. We see it falling down onto him, but someone's left a window open, and so the wall falls to the ground around him. What gives the punchline such impact is that it's a surprise. We ask ourselves, why didn't I see that? We didn't see it because Keaton didn't give us time to think about it. He was getting on with it, not waiting. That's my ideal version of spine. Whenever I find myself wandering down blind alleys, veering away from my spine, I think of Keaton and his straight path to the end. Keep these images in mind whenever you work on developing the spine of a piece, if only to remind you that the process of creating can be thrilling and exciting, and will work better if you can get to the good parts as quickly as possible. I could go on about spines, but that's also the point. Every piece I make now has a spine. It's habitual. It's helpful. and it keeps me on my toes. Exercises. 20. Make a picture that's worth 10,000 words. If a picture is worth 1,000 words, then dance, because it moves, may be worth 10,000. I take comfort in Ludwig Wittgenstein's observation of the resemblance among the various forms that music takes on. The gramophone record, the musical thought, the score, the waves of sound, all stand to one another in that pictorial, internal relation which holds between language and the world. To all of them, the logical structure is common. Wittgenstein was pointing out that there are affinities between seemingly different objects that we comprehend pictorially but cannot verbalize. It is, after all, hard to express how musical thought and sound waves and the undulating scratchings of eighth notes and quarter notes on a sheet of music resemble one another. Each relies on different material and a different grammar. Yet, we sense they are saying the same thing. We sense that they share a common structure because we see and hear the waves. Dance has that power of making us see and feel affinities. Take the White Swan's last exit in Act Two of Swan Lake. The ballerina turns her back to the audience, facing Albrecht, her prince, and Bores across the stage with her arms extended at her sides. As she executes her delicate journey on the points of her toes across the stage, a ripple of movement begins at her left hand's fingertips and continues through all the joints of her left arm, her shoulders and back, through all the joints of her right arm to her right hand's fingertips. The ripple then returns from right to left, again and again, until the undulating gesture accumulates power and creates a burning image of a wave. It is one of the most marvelous moments of beauty and heartbreak in the entire ballet canon. It never fails to elicit a gasp from the audience. It is a gasp of wonder and sorrow. We immediately sense that this ripple is a metaphor for the fluttering of birds' wings. The ballerina is, after all, portraying a swan, but the exquisite move across the stage also reminds us of the wave-like motion of the water supporting this ballerina swan. And her gesture